Hello, Internet. Today is a Sunday in South Korea.
And it's Saturday here in the UK.
Welcome to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed, episode one. So, Richie, what do we have planned for our very first episode?
So, as we said in that short promo episode, a Fantasy Writers Toolshed is dedicated to helping you improve and develop your writing, your storytelling, and your author platform.
Some of the episodes will focus just on general writing, and other episodes will be specific to fantasy, and some will dedicate to helping you build and grow your author platform.
And down the line, we're going to have some giveaways, contests, and we're going to have plenty of guests on to talk about all the hot topics. And above all, we want to hear from you. What's been gnawing away at your writing? Is this something that you'd like us to tackle? Each episode, we'll pick the best question and attack it with our swords and shields. In this episode, we're going to start off with a big fancy not-to-do cliches.
Right, those overused concepts, the tired tropes, all that. But why don't we start by introducing ourselves? Who are you, Richie Billing, and why do you write?
As you may already know, I'm from a city called Liverpool. It's a place well known for strong accents, as you can probably tell. Football, or soccer as you call it, JM, and the Beatles, who you might have heard of. Well, if you haven't, worth checking out, like, they're pretty decent. A little fact about me, my first name is obviously Richard, and my middle name is Edward. So legally, I'm also called Dickhead. And why do I write then? To hide from all the people calling me Dickhead, of course. But seriously, I suppose I write because I absolutely love it. I like creating things for people to enjoy and get lost in for a while, and it keeps me out of trouble. So mostly I write fantasy. I've had about a dozen short stories published, and my debut novel, Pariah's Lament, is due out early next year. So not long ago, I released a book called The Fantasy Writer's Handbook, which sort of spawned this whole podcast thing. What about you, JM? Tell us about you, and why do you write?
Well, I was born in a small city called Duluth, Minnesota. And in the wintertime, it gets very, very cold and there isn't a whole lot to do. So I think I was just stuck in my house thinking about things and shooting invisible aliens. So I started writing really early. I got into it in elementary school. And then in college, I did a bachelor's in English, and I tried to focus as much as I could on writing, short story writing. And after graduating, I kind of professionalized it. So I've also had a bunch of short stories published. I think I'm at 45 or something along those lines. So I do have quite a bit of experience just not only writing and developing content, but working with editors. And going through the whole publishing process. I've also published 5 books, 2 with Fiction Vortex, and a third was a fantasy novella with an indie publisher. So I just think I have a lot of experience to share. You have a lot of technical expertise, especially when it comes to you're really good with your author brand and your marketing, which is something that I struggle with. So I think together we have a lot to offer.
Hopefully so. And that kicks us off today, I think, with our topic, fantasy cliches. So when we were chatting about this podcast and the things we could talk about on it, I think the first thing that came up, wasn't it, JM, was fantasy cliches. And if you head over to like Our Fantasy on Reddit and Our Fantasy Writers or the dozens of different fantasy writing groups on Facebook, you're guaranteed to find questions, queries, and complaints about fantasy's classic tropes. So why is it, JM, do you think that they're so hated?
Well, so cliches. What are cliches? Cliches are elements of writing, either prose or concepts, that are just repeated and repeated and recycled. And I think people hate them just because they lack any sort of ingenuity or creativity. Overusing cliches is lazy writing. The writer's not taking the time to think about their concepts and think about how to create something new. They're not advancing the genre. But that's not to say all tropes or archetypes or repeated elements of a genre are cliches. Cliches are typically very specific and dealing with specific elements. So we're going to dive into a few that are just very specific types of things that are repeated in fantasy over and over again. And we need to get a breath of fresh air and move away from these things. You did that poll on your blog where you asked people what their most hated tropes and cliches and fantasies were, right? So what was the number one?
Yeah, chosen one came off. Clear winner.
So the chosen one cliche, you can think of Luke, Anakin Skywalker / Luke Skywalker, Richard Rall in the Sword of Truth series. There's a lot of manifestations of it. And it takes, I think, as a cliche, as something that is overused and repetitive, I think it takes a few different forms. So one form is the literal chosen one, you know, the prophesized hero. Some ancient prophecy says that there's going to be a hero that comes out of nowhere and defeats the evil bad guy. And of course, that's who our protagonist is. So that's one type of the chosen one cliche. Another one is that the protagonist is a member of some hidden bloodline or the secret, you know, bastard prince that's heir to the throne. So for example, obviously I mentioned Anakin Skywalker, who is literally a, you know, miracle baby created by the midichlorians. I hope the disdain in my voice came out in that one. And then you have a lot of other stories where the protagonist at the end of the story turns out to be the secret, you know, king or the heir to the throne. And it just spoils the creativity of the story. And in my mind, it also lessens the achievements of the protagonist, and it weakens their agency. Yeah. Because everything is all due to them being the fated hero, and not because they're just a great warrior or a smart tactician or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's funny, that kind of thing, isn't it? The way the fate, it's all destiny, and like you say, it does cheapen it when it was all meant to happen. So there's not, it takes the spontaneity of the hero overcoming all these obstacles and seeing them do it without them knowing there's any guiding force behind them. That's what I think is much more appealing than the fated chosen one. I don't know. I think it can be done well. Like, I always think Aragorn in Lord of the Rings, he is a sort of chosen one, but that is not like a main thread of the story. It ties in really well with everything else that's going on. He was a chosen one, but it wasn't as obvious. It wasn't like a main thread of the story. There was loads of other things going on as well in the background. And the way it panned out wrapped up the story really nicely.
Well, yeah, I think you make a good point that he wasn't that wasn't a core concept. It was kind of a subplot. You know, the main protagonist of The Lord of the Rings is a nobody. It's a hobbit. There's a little bit of inheritance because, you know, he's Bilbo Baggins' his descendant, and he happens to inherit the ring, but he's not any part of any specific, you know, epic heroic bloodline, and he's not a prophesized hero. And then the other thing about Aragorn is, by the end of the story, Aragorn is becoming king, but king of what? Like, the world has been, you know, obliterated by war, and it's not necessarily a happy story. Yeah, they beat Sauron, but at what cost? So let's move on to the next topic, which is
mentors. Talking about Lord of the Rings there, I think one of the most sort of typical mentor figure is Gandalf, the noble wise wizard who just seems to know everything and can do everything, but never seems to tell anyone anything. And then leads everyone on a giant quest to right some wrong that he can't fix without the help of everybody else.
So if he isn't telling anybody anything, do you think he's a mentor?
I think it's just, I don't know, they teach them other things, but you know, like he will never help them achieve the overall quest. It's more, let's help you along the way. So, I mean, there's plenty of examples. Like you've got Nakor from Raven Feist Rift War Saga. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
I don't think Gandalf is necessarily a mentor. He's like one of those crazed wizard figures, but he doesn't actually, you know, help Frodo Baggins be anything more than what he is. He doesn't really offer a lot of advice either.
That's what I mean. It's from a storytelling perspective, them kind of figures, they can't reveal much because it'd just be too easy for the story. There's no conflict and it's boring. So all they can do is really show the other characters or teach them specific skills to help them along the way. I mean, I think one of the best mentor characters I've seen in a while, which really shook up the cliche for me, was Kelsier in Mistborn, Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn. Have you read that?
No, I haven't yet. It's on my to-be-read list, which is longer than the novels I write.
Well, yeah, that was a good one, because Kelsier, he was a young, charismatic character, and he was one of the main characters as well, and he was a mentor for another hero as well. So that, I think that was a really fresh way of doing it. But I suppose the mentor, it's such an iconic thing in fantasy when you think about it. It was in Joseph Campbell's A Hero's Journey as one of the necessary steps a hero must go through to fulfill his quest or his destiny or whatever. And most characters, they need to learn from someone in order to grow and develop as characters and as people. And it's the same for us in real life when you think about it. I'm sure you've got someone in your life who taught you a lot in some way or another.
I like to think that I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps.
Yeah. Again, this is the problem now, I think, with the cliche, isn't it? Is that not everyone has a teacher or a mentor, and the people who don't have a harder job because they've got to, like you say, pull themselves up by their own bootstraps.
And then I think it's also related to, it depends on the character that you've built as well, right? So mentors are important if your character is the nobody farm boy that has no experience, which itself is another type of cliche, but can be done well. But if your character is already a military officer or already an assassin or has some sort of experience, they might not necessarily need a mentor to teach them everything about the world. The mentor has often been a vehicle for introducing the lore of the world to the reader.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, you have to have a naive, ignorant character. And I think that's not always the best way to go. So for example, in Call of the Guardian, very quickly on in the first chapter, the character, like all that mentorship happens behind the scenes, and the book really starts with the character having already learned what it takes to fulfill the role that he's supposed to fulfill, other than just lack of actual, you know, battle experience. So I think it makes it a little bit more compelling to jump in and to have a character that already kind of knows where they're going, or at least knows what's expected of them. It does make the world building a little bit more difficult though.
Yeah. Well, I think from a story perspective, if you've got a character who has to overcome more obstacles without the help of a guide or a mentor, that's just that you're creating more opportunities, you're creating more opportunities for yourself to introduce conflict into the story. And that's what drives plot and character growth and development, is these obstacles that they have to overcome.
And the character is more vulnerable when they have to figure things out on their own, and more apt to make mistakes, which can be more compelling as well.
Definitely, yeah. So that is why I suppose everyone's a bit fed up with the cliche, is let's dish the mentors. school.
Just like everything else, it's done too much. It happens too often. If every fantasy book, every fantasy hero has a mentor, it stops being meaningful and it just starts being something that's just repetitive, if not, mandatory. Oh, you have to have it. But obviously you don't have to have it. There's ways of doing it, ways about going about telling your story without having to have mentors.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of cliches, overdone cliches. Now, I don't know about you, JM, but I don't really like evil villains just for the sake of evil. I know sometimes it can work. I know Sauron was a very good villain, and you don't really question why. I mean, if you're, there's a reason somewhere tucked away in the Silmarillion, but it doesn't really affect the story in a negative way. But yeah, I don't know. I think we've moved on from that now because I don't know. Generally, as human beings, we like to seek out the reasons behind things, and as readers, seek the reasons behind characters' actions and motives. So, I know a lot of contemporary fantasy has taken that on board, and stories make for much more interesting reads as a result. One book I was reading recently is a book called Grendel by John Gardner, which is a retelling of the classic story Beowulf from the perspective of Grendel, the bad guy, the villain. And it was really interesting, actually. And he's a brilliant writer. He's so poetic in in his prose. So definitely worth checking out. And a more recent example is the Joker film. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't seen it yet, but I plan to.
Oh, I won't give any spoilers then. But I mean, it's a retelling of, it's like an origin story, isn't it? Of like a classic Batman villain. And we see his vulnerabilities, his heartaches, the pain and the downfall, which leads him to become the villain. And I don't know, it feels more real. It's more satisfying for the story when you see these characters fleshed out.
You can really encapsulate the modern shift towards deeper villains in Star Wars. So the original trilogy, the Empire was exactly that, just evil for evil's sake. The Emperor was just this bad evil guy who wanted power, and then everybody followed him blindly. And interestingly, when later books have tried to create motivation in the Imperials, it really didn't work. It really doesn't make sense, because you can't really justify blowing up Alderaan and killing, 6 billion people or however many people there. Like, you're never going to be able to create a reasonable motivation to do that. So I think I think in the original Star Wars trilogy, you just kind of accepted evil for evil's sake, and it was just part of the fantasy. But when the new series came out, I think the new trilogy came out and people had higher expectations, and there was a lot of disappointment that type of villain was rehashed. The First Order was just the same thing. It was just evil without any clear motivation. They just wanted to blow stuff up and they just wanted to be bad. And I think a lot of people were disappointed. I was disappointed that there was no nuance, especially because you got a lot of villain nuance in the expanded universe books that came out in the 1990s. In particular, the Heir to the Empire series, Timothy Zahn, I think is the author's name. So he had a villain named Thrawn, who is pretty famous now. And Thrawn becomes the kind of the head of the Imperial military after the destruction of the Death Star and the death of the Emperor. And those books really dive deep into Thrawn's mentality and why he is the way he is. And there's cultural factors. He's a military officer. He comes from a militaristic culture. There's, he's faced with kind of racism and ethnocentrism in the Empire that is kind of this pro-human type society. And there's just a lot of deep motivations to why he wants to be the military leader of the new empire and why he's doing what he's doing. It's not just, it's the empire and they're bad and they're evil and that's the end of it. So I think it makes this, like you said, it makes the story more compelling when the villains have motivations and we can understand it. Now you take that to the extreme and you end up with something like Grimdark, where everybody's just a little bit evil and everybody's a little bit good and it's all shades of gray. And yeah. I'm not myself a Grimdark writer, though I know a lot of people get into it. I think that goes a little bit too far for me.
Joe Abercrombie, he's a Grimdark writer. Have you read any of him?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, he's British. I went to see him actually. A talk. Very interesting guy. Good stories as well. Worth checking out. Another cliche that scored quite high in that poll of mine was Tolkien races. So by that I mean the beardy dwarves that hoard gold and the tree hugging elves with an incredible knack for shooting bows. What do you think about this one, JM?
Well, I think we all have a lot that we owe to Tolkien for really popularizing the fantasy genre. I think the idea of humanoid races, it starts with Tolkien, but it really takes off with, you know, things like Dungeons and Dragons, which just blatantly rip off Tolkien's ideas and replicate them and then turn them into this kind of mass market product. So, you know, at least Americans, everybody knows what a fantasy elf and a fantasy dwarf is. And the problem is it just goes back to the same issue with other cliches, is that it's just done too much and it's just very lazy to just take someone, you know, take another idea and just slap it on your story and not do anything to inject your own creativity. So, and I think it's, you can tell how widespread it is because, you know, half of fantasy book covers on Amazon have an elf or something on it. Dragon. And you see it replicated in video games and other mediums as well.
I mean, I do like the Tolkien races, I have to say. I mean, it's why Tolkien and what he created is the reason why I fell in love with the genre in the first place. So I'll always have a soft spot for them. And I don't know, there is an attraction to them. It from a writer's perspective, you know that people like them. So you're not really taking a chance on creating something that people might not like. So I can kind of see why writers do it, but I do agree that you need to be original in some way or another. I mean, I'm writing a collection of short stories at the moment about an orc race, because I like that orc character. I like the sort of meanness, the formidable enemy, and I didn't just want to copy it. I wanted to put my own spin on it, so that has been quite fun, coming up with new features and warping how you perceive an orc to be. So yeah, it's been quite enjoyable.
There's definitely some utility to using cliches and things like this. I mean, when you're talking about short stories, or in my case, flash fiction, it is convenient to be able to just drop the word goblin and your reader knows what that means, and you don't have to spend time world building and describing it. But on the flip side, and that works. In shorter fictions, you have to find shortcuts, and that's a shortcut you can take. The trouble I have more is when you're getting into like longer works, novels and novellas, and series, multi-part novel series, where you have a lot of space and kind of a duty to world build, and you choose to just borrow tired ideas. I think that's where I kind of draw the line. And that's not to say that Tolkien races, that you can't use them. I think, like you said, a lot of writers a lot of writers just copy what's popular because they don't want to take on the risk. But I think risk is important because doing risky things and original things is what drives the genre and allows the genre to evolve. So there's examples of Tolkien races being adopted and used in interesting ways. So I think the Dragon Age series, which is a series of video games that has kind of spawned into multimedia comic books and books and movies and things like that. In the Dragon Age series, they have Tolkien style elves who live in the woods, and they're kind of like, you know, these shaman type characters. However, that story imposes a class warfare type thing upon the relation of the humans and elves. So the elves are in a social position, a lower social position to the humans, and they are treated poorly. They are ostracized. There's a lot of racism. And I think that is a very compelling way to utilize those racial differences that doesn't get necessarily approached in a lot of other works.
That's clever. Very clever indeed.
And then, as you know, we had a Facebook question about this topic. Archer Gray asked us, as a fantasy writer, I noticed that a lot of people tend to stick to races and creatures which we already essentially know. My question is, how do you describe unique and weird characters without getting into exposition dumps? So I think that question is a two-part question. We've kind of addressed the first issue about writers sticking to races and creatures that we already know. And again, that's a lot of that is just utility. And it depends on kind of the space that you have available. When you're writing flash fiction and every word counts, you might rely on tried and true a little bit more. But I think when you get into longer works, there should be an expectation that you do something new and you do something innovative. Well, when you're doing something new and innovative, like creating an entirely new race that has a different look, how do you introduce that? I think we're going to get into that a little bit more in later episodes when we describe world building and we describe character. But I think just a shorthand answer is it's important to not underestimate your reader. And this is something that I learned early on. You don't have to repeat descriptions again and again and again. And you don't have to be too blunt about the description. So you don't have to extract the description into an exposition dump and say, you know, he was a member of the squid people and they have eight tentacles coming off their heads and they have green eyes. And you don't have to like build it into an exposition describing this race. You can be a little bit more subtle with dropping hints of description, like, you know, one of his eight tentacles twitched at the question or something, and have it be part of the narrative as opposed to being separate description, separate exposition. And the other thing is, once you introduce those details a couple times, the reader is just gonna remember them.
Yeah. What do you think about assassins?
Oh, assassins. I think there's way, way too many assassins these days. Every book seems to be a rogue or a thief or an assassin. And I'm just kind of, I don't know, I'm just tired of it. It was fun when the first few, you know, when that kind of subgenre took off and it was fun to have anti-heroes, but now it's just getting repetitive.
It is, yeah. I like vampires, but the vampires have all gone now.
Yeah, I think they've all been assassinated.
Nice. So that's about it for this episode. But before we go, we've got time for a little competition. I've got a brand new book coming out on the 2nd of December, which has received rapturous advanced reviews, of course.
Ooh.
Didn't expect any less there, JM, did you? Anyway, you can win a paperback copy plus a finely made T-shirt featuring the front cover, which was brilliantly hand-drawn by my sister's boyfriend, Mark Vernal. Little shout-out to Ellen and Mark there for listening. Mark done the artwork for our Of Metal and Magic anthology as well, hasn't he? He's very good, so check him out.
Yeah, he did the maps and the timelines that are going to be inside the book. Very nice.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy. So to enter the competition to win these things, all you've got to do is head over to our Facebook page and send us your question for us to tackle next episode. It could be about anything to do with writing, anything to do with fantasy, and we'll pick our favorite one and we'll tackle it in the next episode. So all you've got to do, head over to our Facebook page. JM, have you got the URL?
Yep, so you can find us at www.facebook.com/thefantasywriterstoolshed. No apostrophe. That's pretty simple, right? The Fantasy Writers Toolshed, no spaces, no apostrophes. And yeah, just send us a question and we will pick the best one. And not only will we answer your, or try to answer your question at the beginning of the next episode, if you get picked for your question, you will win that nice package of a book and t-shirt.
Nice one. What are we going to be talking about in the next episode?
So this time around, we talked about cliches in fantasy to avoid. Next episode, we're going to put that on its head, and we're going to talk about how to effectively employ tropes and archetypes in a innovative and a positive way. And we might offer some examples of other writers that have done so effectively. If you don't want to miss it, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Thanks to everyone for listening. It's been fun. I've had a good time anyways.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it too. So like JM said, please hit that subscribe button and you'll get the latest episode as soon as it comes out. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.